Genesis 6, if you would. Genesis 6. How many this morning? Right? Grandpa Noah. Your great, 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 great grandpa and mine. Genesis 6, 9 says, these are the genealogies of Noah. But actually, before I do, let me mention a few announcements real quick. As Jim already said, we're very excited. We've been trying to get a Jewish Voice Ministries here I've been trying for like 3 years or so now to just get them to send someone, and we've got the best coming, Vanessa. She's great. She's going to meet with Zeke also, and they're going to have time. I mean, she'll be sharing there, and they are. Let's keep it on there for a second. They have these medical mission trips, medical outreaches to various areas, and I'm hoping that a number of us will be able to participate at Kol Dodi with them. So don't miss her. She'll share for part of the time next week. And now, Dr. Don Finto on the 21st of November is coming. There's a possibility of something else as well, but we want him to be here, and we're so excited that he's going to be here. There were just some others that are approaching us. It seems like everything's happening that weekend in Nashville, and everyone's saying, "Can we come to your congregation then?" and stuff. And it's great; they're great folks. But we have Dr. Don Finto sharing Papa Don, and he really has on his heart his message from his book Prepare. I think wants to share with us. Very important in this time. And then, of course, Marty Goetz, that's been trying to happen for years. We just, with our schedules, and he's going to be with us for Hanukkah. So mark your calendars, and it's going to be a full day. And actually, I'm hoping we could also do a Hanukkah fun, if not night, maybe because many of you travel from different places, maybe after the Oneg, a fun time of sharing poems, skits, impersonations, and have prizes, all sorts of things for the worst impersonation and the best one, of course. Everything clean and godly, of course, but have some really Hanukkah fun. So we'll see as that gets closer. And then the Southeast Regional, I'm going to be there to plan for that this coming couple days, actually, leaving later today for that. And this is in Orlando. And all of us need to get to one of these conferences. They'll have well over 1,000 people, classes that will just, Dr. Michael Brown will be there, and many, many different great leaders, Messianic rabbis teaching excellent classes. So I encourage you to try to come if there's any way you can do it. December 18th through 20th at that's the weekend at the Rosen Plaza in Orlando. So back to Noah. These are the genealogies, toldot. Let's say toldot. So toldot is genealogies. You know, it's interesting. The New Testament begins with, if we were to translate it into Hebrew, the book of the genealogy would say Sefer Toldot, the book of the genealogy, Sefer Toldot Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. And then he's the son of who? Ben David, Ben Abraham, son of David, son of Abraham. That would be the first verse of the Brit Chadashah, the New Testament, the New Covenant. If we were to put it into Hebrew, we realize it's written in Greek. But many believe Matthew's Gospel was actually written originally in Hebrew. There's word plays in the Hebrew if you translate it into Hebrew. But they lost the original manuscript, we don't have it. But these are the genealogies of Noah. And how do you say Noah in Hebrew? Who knows? Noah, right. Let's all say it. Noah, it's Noah, but with a at the end. Clear your throat, which is easy this time of year if you have all sorts of seasonal allergies. Noah. All right. So it says that Noah was a righteous man, as we read on. A righteous man, he was blameless among his generation. What does that mean? Noah continually walked with God. Well, he was a model of faithfulness, wasn't he? Faithfulness, of trust in God. Trust in God, it wasn't easy. Obedience, dedication, endurance. And the word righteous is tzaddik. Let's say tzaddik. Good, it's right up there. It's in that verse there. Yeah, tzaddik. Ish tzaddik. A righteous man. And he was blameless, which means the word tamim. Let's say tamim. Tamim. It's right. That's the, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4th word in there. Tamim haya. He was tamim. Means requires nothing more. Isn't that a cool definition? To require nothing more. So think about it this way. He, in his generation, he was satisfied with God, with what God gave him. He didn't need more. He was satisfied. He needed nothing else. He wasn't entitled. Big buzzword today. Entitled. He walked with God, it says. And the walk with God, the root halach, let's say halach, it's the root. I don't have it up there, but there's the root. But the root halach means to progress step by step toward a goal. To progress step by step toward a goal. And so Noah, walking with God and doing what God is telling him to do, and he fathered 3 sons in verse 10, we see. He fathered 3 sons, and what were their names? Shem, Ham. I thought Ham isn't not to eat Ham. Why did he name his son Ham? You're not supposed to, no. Ham in Hebrew, actually, Ham. And Shem and Yafet, and and if you're wondering which one of these 3 you're related to, I will tell you after. No, actually, AJ will tell you, scholar, after service, which one actually you're written. No, we're not really sure of the actual geographic areas like it's mentioning up there, as if they're not really sure. The ethnicities coming from these geographical areas. These are all speculation. So, but we are related to one of them. We're sons of Noah and daughters of Noah, all of us. And it says, look what happened in verse 11 and 12. The earth was filled. It reached a point of ruination and violence. Ruination and violence. The word shechat, the root, means of ruin. It means degenerative irreversibility. That's scary. There comes a point at which you can't turn it around. Degenerative irreversibility. There comes a point in a culture, in a society, where God says, that's enough. It's it. Judgment's coming, and there's no turning it around. At what point that is, only God knows. It will happen. Violence, Hamas, sounds like Hamas, the terrible. And how about terrible what's going on in Israel now? We need to keep Israel in prayer, keep in contact some of you. I mean, I believe there's over 100 Israelis have been either killed or injured. But these, you know, because of the incitement of the Palestinians being incited to stab Israelis, I mean, it's just horrible. Very tough times. You know, imagine in your school, your child is in school and can't leave. They're locked down, so to speak. They can't just. I mean, it was always so safe to go in Israel. Always so safe to walk everywhere. And I would still go, by the way, if God led me to go at this time to be there. But wow, tough times, and it could be leading to much more tougher times, but. So the Lord tells Noah in verse 14, look at verse 14, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. And Noah's response was, do what? Not actually, his response was what Hebrews 11 says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of realities not seen. Now, faith, Hebrews 11, 6, without faith, it's impossible to please God. For the one who comes to God must believe that he exists and he's a rewarder of those that seek him. And it says 3 times in 6:22 and 7:5 of Genesis here, says that Noah did as God commanded him. Basically, he did what God told him to do. 3 times, and that there it is, ken asa, it repeats it, certainly he did, or yes, he did. who would say, Noah did, 6:22 of Genesis, Noah did according to all that God commanded him. He did it so exactly is how TLV translates it. But I would just, and that's fine, but it just says he did what all that God commanded him. Yes, he did. The repetition means he followed God's command scrupulously. Now, Noah did, it says again in chapter 7, verse 5. See it again. Noah did all just as Adonai commanded him. Four times it mentions God commanded, as God commanded him, or all God commanded him, how the creatures came into the ark. So what is God telling you to do today? What is God telling you to do or me to do today? Does it have to make sense? Did it make sense what he was asked to do as far as from his vantage point? What seven things, here's a quiz, what seven things, I counted up there, I count seven things, what seven things did God tell Noah to do? Did he tell him, what seven things? First one is right there, we just said, right? What is it? Make an ark, right? Build an ark, construct an ark. It took him anywhere between 52 and 120 years, according to the scholars and whatnot, to do it. We don't know, somewhere in there. 52 years to 120 years. So it's not like it took a week, you know, like building a sukkah, or, you know, a couple days, like we just build in Torah. But it took him a long time. And then what was the second thing? He said, well, I'll just tell you because it's kind of, but feel free to shout some things out. Come into the ark with your family. That's another thing he asked them to do, to come into the ark and to bring his family in. What's another thing he had to do? You're all right. I don't know what you're all saying, but you're all right. All right, so bring two of every species into the ark. That's 6:19. The other was 6:18. Did he have to bring anything for the species and for his family in the ark? Food, right, okay, took food, you probably already said that, but took food of every type, it says, 6:21, into the ark, and then after he was in the ark, and after the flood, Mabul, after it, what did God tell him to do? Come out of the ark, right? Really, God told him to go in. Now, some believe that it was starting to rain before he went in, that it actually took the, but God told him to go in, and then God, he didn't just go out when he wanted to. God told him to go out, and so that's when he went out with his family, again, chapter 8, verse 15. And then he was to bring what else with him? What else beside his family? All the species, right? Yeah, all the animals, creatures, 8:17. And then one more thing. What did God tell him to do after he came out? Chapter 9, verse 1 and verse 7. Right, be fruitful and multiply and fill the land. Doing it all over again. So think of the trust it took. Let's say emunah. Emunah is trust or faith. Think of the faith it took for Avraham to do, for Noah to do what he did trusting God with all this. You know, let's say the word mabul. It means flood. There's a group. If some of you like heavier music, I was introduced to this group, Orphaned Land, years ago. It's not for everyone. I want to warn you. There's even screamo and stuff, but it's very intense music about the flood. They have a whole album, on Mabul, on the flood, and it's really they're incredible musicians out of Israel. They're an Israeli group band, and it's all on the flood. And I wouldn't, it'd be a little too heavy to play here, but right now. This was the flood and rain. What is that? Were they familiar with this? No, it was all new. And 6:17, 7:4 talks about the flood. God said, "I'm going to bring flood. I'm going to bring rain." What about an ark? You know, what's that? Let's see. And I'm going to teach Sean's teaching on archaeology. I'm going to teach on the archaeology of constructing what the ark looked like. There it is. That's what it looked like right up there. No, I'm sorry to say. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to teach on archaeology. I don't know. think about it. By the way, this word for ark is the word, it's only used for Noah's ark and for one other thing in the Bible. Anyone know what else it's used for? No, not the Ark of the Covenant. No, that's a different word. It's used for the basket that Moses was put in. The basket. Yeah, I didn't know that either. So the rabbis say, well, see, so Noah's in some way prefigures also Moses. Noah prefigures Moses. But why build this? Why go into it? You know? And with all these creatures, Noah could have said, this is crazy. Why am I going to do this? And, you know, here's a cute one. It says, what was Noah's greatest worry? What was his greatest worry? Those two mosquitoes. You know, because they brought everyone in two. You know, whack. Oh, no. No more. They won't be. That would have been okay with me if no more mosquitoes, you know. We wouldn't have mosquitoes any. But I guess God knows we need them. Spiders, when I get to heaven, I'm going to really ask why. No, we know spiders kill things, good, bad things. So, so Noah was 12 months. Did you know that he was 12 months in the ark? You know, it's 40 days and 40 nights of rain that obliterated all life, and really 150 days of rain itself, actually 150. Almost, think about it, almost no outside light. Again, you make the joke, what kind of lights? Was there any lights they use in the flood? Do you ever hear this one? Floodlights. Floodlights. I found these jokes. I looked up for some jokes. All right. So, but really, think about it. Almost no outside light. Maybe there was a window, a chalon, in chapter 8, verse 6, but we don't know where that was. The translation, I used to teach it, you know, the window above. I love that idea, you know, but that's really not what the Hebrew says, I don't think. So, but there was some sort of a window, 8:6. But the rabbis talk about there in 6:16 a tsohar. Tsohar, it was a source of, means a source of illumination, and this have been a skylight, or many the rabbis say think it was a precious stone or a jewel that actually gave off light, within the ark. We don't know. This is just speculation, but. Think about it. If you're in this huge boat, this vessel, how would you navigate it? How did he navigate it? No, he didn't. There's no oars. I mean, there's no way to, you're inside. No way. He really had to trust God, didn't he? How about us in life? Do we have to trust God with the way our ark is sometimes going? I mean, where God is taking us and where we are, you know, we're not in control. We're not in control. You are, right? Who's in control of everything here? No, don't raise your hand. You're wrong. We're really not, are we? I mean, things, God tells us to do things, calls us to do things, and things happen in life, and we're not in control. We have to trust God. We do our part. We have to be obedient to do our part. But we, ultimately, the Lord is in control. There was no way to navigate the vessel, this chest or box-like object. It floated, think of it, floating up and down, right and left, side to side. I would have gotten very seasick. I don't know about you. I've been on a ship and a smaller vessel, and I, you know, when I was chaplaining a mission ship, and boy, there was one point in rough waters in the Caribbean, 36 people on a Norwegian vessel built for the cold, not the heat, and built for like 20 people, this one, or 25, and it was 30. And at one point, everyone got seasick, you know, and you didn't see anyone for like a few days. Everyone was just buried down in their bunker, just like groaning and drinking sips of ginger ale, if, you know, maybe. Yeah. But, you know, I can't imagine. And think about it. We were just in a period of a lot of rain, weren't we? And how did you feel after rain day after day after day, and you don't see the sun day after day? You start to get depressed a little bit, don't you? You start to feel, you know, and you get in a cabin fever, they call it, right? But really, honestly, what is God telling you to do? What is God telling me to do? What is God telling? Will it possibly be criticized or looked down upon? Who is the Lord calling you to rescue? Does it seem pointless? It did for him, I'm sure. He didn't know why, all the whys. It seems pointless sometimes what God tells us to do. And it won't be easy. It's not easy. It's not instant either. It's certainly not instant. But it sure will be worth it to do what God tells you, is telling you to do. It sure will be worth it. Was it worth it for Noah? You know, God may have to, sometimes God has to in our lives and in the people we love, cleanse everything like he did with a flood and start over again. Sometimes that's what has to happen. That's not easy. But he has to wipe it, clean it, everything, and says, let's start. Okay, once again, like Genesis 1:28, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. Start over again. Let's start over again. Let's go. Sometimes that happens. Major change, transition, innovation is never pleasant, and it's always uncomfortable. Often it's distasteful, and it's most certainly difficult, even formidable. But God and you are equal to the task. That's the point. God is telling Noah what to do. Noah, he did it what God commanded, and that's enough. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be very difficult, but it's going to work out. It's going to be working out. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks describes faith of England, rather, I always have to clarify, of England, describes faith as having, listen to this, having the courage to pioneer, to do something new, to take the road less traveled, to venture out into the unknown. I'm quoting parts of segments from what he said. Such is the fate of innovators. The people concerned had to face a barrage of criticism, disdain, opposition, or disregard. You have to be prepared to be lonely, at best misunderstood, at worst vilified and defamed. As Einstein said, if my theory of relativity is proven successful, Germany will claim me as a German, and France will declare me a citizen of the world. Should my theory prove untrue, France will say that I'm a German, and Germany will declare that I'm a Jew. To be a pioneer, as Jews know from our history, you have to be prepared to spend a long time in the wilderness. That was the faith of the early Zionists. Faith is the courage to take a risk for the sake of God or the Jewish people or the people that God has us in the gap for, to begin a journey to a distant destination, knowing that there will be hazards along the way, but knowing also that God is with us, giving us strength if we will align our will with his. Faith is not certainty, but the courage to live with uncertainty. And you say, but it's certain because it's God's word. Well, yes, but it's still uncertain in our own emotions, in our own what we see, in our own visibility. And it says in chapter 8, verse 20, here's an interesting thing. When Noah, after all this, he gets out of the ark, leaves with his family, the species, all the creatures brought out, and in verse 20, what does Noah do? Yes, he made an offering. Noah built an ark, an altar to Adonai, and he took of every clean domestic animal and every clean flying creature, and he offered burnt offerings on the altar. Noah gave of every clean animal and bird and offered burnt offerings to God. That's worship. That's worship. In other words, acknowledging God as the owner of everything. Lord, it's really all yours. Like David said, of your own we have given to you, and I give back to you what's yours. Anyway, of everything he wanted to show. Now, did God tell him to do that? I don't see any record where God told him to, commanded him to. He was initiating to God and for God. That's innovation. We need to do that. We're to initiate often for the Lord. And, you know, where is the ark today, by the way? It says in 8:4 that it was upon the mountains, ended up on the mountains with the water subsiding, you know, on the mountains of Ararat. Who knows where that is today? No, it's actually Nissan Stadium, the Titan Stadium. That's where the ark is now. You'll see it if you go there next. What are they playing? Miami this week? No, who are they? So no, okay. It's actually today modern. It's Turkey today. It would be what Turkey, Iraq, Armenia, and Iran. All of that. So we don't know where it is, except that we have it in Titan State. Okay. So what happened after he got out of the ark, told to be fruitful, multiply? Then Noah is not perfect. Look at chapter 9. Noah, not perfect. It says he built a vineyard. 9:20. He was a man of the earth, a man of the soil. He was the first to plant a vineyard. He drank some of the wine, got drunk, and was uncovered in his tent. Then Ham, Canaan's father, saw his father's private parts and told his two brothers outside. So Shem and Japhet took the cloak and laid it over both their shoulders. It's actually shoulder in the Hebrew. It's a singular because they were united in one. And they walked backwards and with it covered their father's parts, but the faces were turned away. Their faces were turned away so they did not see it. So what a picture there is. Noah is not perfect. Our heroes are also human. Saints are not sinners. Saints are sinners. Saints are also sinners, I should say. So here he becomes intoxicated. What does the Bible teach about abstinence? About alcohol. Does it teach abstinence? No, but if it's a problem for you, yes. Really? If it's a problem, yes. Ephesians 5:18 to 20 says, "Do not get drunk on wine, for that is recklessness. Instead, be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making music in your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks for everything to God the Father in the name of Yeshua, the Lord Yeshua the Messiah." So do I do things and do I drink, for example, because it's just the thing to do when I'm with others? Don't I have a higher purpose, a more urgent goal? Now I don't believe the Bible teaches total abstinence regarding alcohol. I used to teach that. I used to believe that because I was taught that in a Bible college where I went to. And I'm trying to protect the students, I think, from, you know. But, may I say, you don't have to drink just because others do it. And if it's a problem for you, if it's going to lead to intoxication, then it is sin. It's wrong and it's sin. And you have to be wise about it. And thing is, he says, what do you need that for? You've got a higher purpose. We're here to be a light to the world. We're here to reach others. We've got a higher purpose. I don't have to be getting drunk to feel better. Proverbs 31, verses 4 and 5, "It's not for you to kings to drink wine or for rulers to crave strong drink, lest they drink, forget what is decreed, and pervert justice for all the oppressed." Why are we so dumb? I said this last year at this time because it's from notes from last year I found. But I like, why are we so dumb as to be brainwashed into believing that we need a beer with our football game or we're not manly? Who told you that you're not on par socially at an artistic event if you don't have a glass of wine in your hand? Every day in America, another 28 people die as a result of drunk driving crashes. So be wise. Listen, wine is, God also says, it also says in Psalm, I think, 104, he gives wine to make glad the heart of man. I don't believe the Bible teaches it's, you know, and Jesus turned the water into wine, but intoxication is wrong, is taught as sinful. And we have to remember, it's not only us, it's others that are watching us, and we're examples to others. So use wisdom. You know, Proverbs 23 gives a whole thing on it. 23 verses 29 through 35, "Who has woe, who has sorrow, who has fights and complaining and bruises for no reason, red eye," says, don't, you know, in the end it bites like a serpent, and he talks about the dangers of being addicted to alcohol and just how you embarrass yourself. Noah embarrassed himself here. He embarrassed himself. He was full, he was very unwise. But in case we're too judgmental on someone who drinks, there are many other excesses and addictions that are, if not equally, are also, if not equally, they're harmful or destructive. What about worry? Some people destroy themselves with worry or with envy. You know, let me back up. Worrying all the time is sin. I don't know who it was who said, it was one great reformer, I think, he said to, worry is worse than getting drunk. If I'm worrying all the time, you're a terrible testimony for the Lord. God, you think God is pleased with that? You're not trusting him. I'm not trusting him. So you say, oh, that person is, if you see someone that's stumbling all over the place because they're drunk, you say, oh, how terrible. And meanwhile, you're worrying all the time about something, you know? That's no better. We're no, it's what about gambling or pornography or drugs or gaming? Can be, any of these can be excesses, you know? Or some are wrong as they are, but what about gossip, you know? Gossip. I need to know this. I get really, if you see me react, I'll react when someone is trying to get me to tell them information about someone else, and I can tell it's that spirit of gossip, I will react, and I won't answer them, and I'll seem cold, because I sense it. It's like Yeshua, you know, Peter saying, what about this guy, you know, after the resurrection? What about him? And Yeshua said, you follow me. That's my business. I'll take care of him. You follow me. And so when someone, you have this thing, I just need to know, I want to know. That's a lust for gossip. And we need to be careful about it. And so, you know, tell me more. What about overeating, excessive overeating or overexercise or over excessive shopping? There were all many things. But whether intentional or not, Noah did a foolish thing here. We don't know if he, I don't think he intended to get drunk, and we don't know, but he's not alone. Saints are also sinners. Our heroes are human. Paul said, I'm the chief, the foremost of sinners, 1 Timothy 1:15. The very least of the saints, Ephesians 3:8. He said, I'm the worst. He says, I'm the worst. I'm not worthy to be called an emissary, but by the grace of God, I am what I am, 1 Corinthians 15:9. Abraham ran down to Egypt in a famine test, and he lied about Sarah, his wife. Moses murdered an Egyptian. And he lost his temper, and he screamed at the people. David lusted after another man's wife and committed adultery and murder. Esther cared more for her own survival than her people's at first. Peter denied Yeshua and lied. We could go through the list, the cast of characters, men and women in the scriptures, and see that many times what happened was they feared man. They feared humanity rather than trusting God. And yet Hebrews 11 mentions them and their trust in God with no mention of their episodes of distrust. Isn't that amazing? You read Hebrews 11 and the heroes of faith, and it doesn't mention, bring up their sins. I liked it, and I'll just say this. Excuse me, I'm sorry if this might not sit well with some people, and I'm not advocating theology here. I'm just talking about, I heard when the Pope was here and he spoke to inmates in Philadelphia, and I loved it when he said, I just happened to catch the thing. He said to these inmates, many of these guys in there, for, you know, tough, horrible, can't imagine, what, you know, tough lives, and they're paying for their crimes. And he says, Jesus doesn't ask you where you've been or what you've done. He doesn't ask you what you've done. He just wants, but he does tell you to let me wash your feet or you can't share with me. I loved it. It was just, I felt the Spirit of God taking it. I'm saying, I said, that reminds me of Wormbrandt, my hero, you know. He doesn't ask you where you've been, what you've done. He says, it's me and you and me now. Will you let me wash your feet? Will you let me wash your feet so you can share with me? That's what, and I watched their faces, and they were on the verge of tears, a lot of these guys, tough guys, and men and women. So I'll bring this to a close now, but Hebrews 11, no mentioning of the episodes of distrust, of where they didn't trust God, but mentions their faith. Noah, his faith, he trusted God. What actually occurred here with Noah, you know, we don't know. What did Ham do? Most likely he violated both filial honor, didn't honor his parents, like he should have honored them, and bodily modesty. Likely it was not the sin of incest or other sick sexual sins that some of the commentators think. But this story depicts the difference between exposing and gossiping versus covering. They covered. The two other sons covered. Talking about a problem versus doing something to resolve a problem. Being destructive versus constructive. They took and they covered him. They acted rather than gossiped about it. It's a beautiful, beautiful story that we don't talk about the problem or someone's sin or failure. Do something to mend it. Do something to heal it. Do something redemptive to remedy it. Amen. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, the film we recently saw, Ushpizin, was on that, about that segment of Judaism. He said, regarding the power of speech, never let a word of wickedness leave your mouth. When people speak derogatorily about others, their spiritual awareness and understanding are withdrawn from them, and they fall from the love of God and descend into animalistic passions and desires. Shem and Japheth took singular in the on their shoulder they is in the singular, their unity of humility is there. They, with one intent, to cover their father, to cover him, and they didn't glance behind, they didn't glance at his shame, but they turned away their faces. What a beautiful, beautiful story of how we should be not quick to condemn or judge others or spread a rumor or gossip. Rather than look at somebody's sin, join with a like-minded brother or sister in Yeshua to clothe their exposed condition and see them restored. Saints are sinners. Our hearers are human. Father, we just thank you for